Hello, and welcome back to the Moroccan History Podcast, hosted by Saeed. Episode 4, The Amazigh Emirates. In the end of our last episode, the Roman client kingdom of Mauritania had just been provincialized by Rome in AD 44, after the Emperor Caligula had assassinated the last Ptolemaic monarch in history. We will now travel centuries later, well after the fall of the Western Roman Empire, well after the birth of Christ, into the origins of the modern Moroccan state. It may come as no surprise that Morocco's political roots are intricately tied to the birth of a movement and the inception of a religion that has changed the course of history, Islam. Indeed, despite having an indigenous Amazigh population and culture well before the arrival of the Umayyad Muslim conquerors, the modern institutions of the centralized Moroccan state were established within the political and cultural upheaval caused by the dazzling Umayyad Muslim conquests of the Maghreb. Historians traditionally attribute the birth of modern Morocco to the year AD 789, when an exiled Arab prince established the Idrisid dynasty. But a more pragmatic approach to history tells us otherwise. When Idris I established what is traditionally considered the first Moroccan state, three other centralized political entities were already established in Morocco and thrived throughout the existence of the Idrisid Emirate. These three entities were the Emirate of Nikkor, centered in the northern Mediterranean coasts of Morocco, the Emirate of Sijilmassa, centered around the Moroccan region of Tafilet, and the Emirate of Benawata, the mightiest of the three, centered around the Atlantic coastal region of Rabat. This episode will be split into four parts. First, we will briefly delve into the Umayyad conquest of North Africa. Second, we will try and understand how the Umayyad rule in North Africa led to the Great Berber Revolt of AD 740. And third, we will see how this revolt precipitated the birth of the Amazigh Emirates and of modern Morocco, before ending on a hypothesis as to why the Amazigh Emirates have been forgotten to history in favor of the Idrisid Emirate as the founders of modern Morocco. Part 1, The Umayyad Conquest of North Africa. Very few empires have marked the sands of time the way the Umayyads have. Before the advent of Islam, the Umayyads were a wealthy merchant clan from the Quraysh tribe of Mecca, from the same tribe as the Prophet of Islam. When the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salam, peace be upon him, started preaching the new religion, the Umayyads were at first very hostile to Islam and became some of the Prophet's staunchest opponents. However, the Umayyad leader, Sakhr ibn Harb, more commonly known as Abu Sufyan, later converted to Islam and became one of the Prophet's companions. Upon the death of the Prophet, a succession of four Rashidun or rightly guided caliphs followed, and through successive battles and a civil war, the Umayyad clan established the first Muslim hereditary dynasty in history after the assassination of the fourth caliph, Ali. Early Arab Muslim and specifically Umayyad history is actually a very passionate chapter filled with amazing stories and epic battles, which I will unfortunately not have time to delve into during this episode, but I may devote a future episode to it. So, back to Wind of the West. The Umayyad conquest of North Africa started under the reign of the third Rashidun Caliph, himself an Umayyad, but not a hereditary secular ruler, in AD 647. The third Caliph, Uthman, sent an army of 20,000 soldiers under the command of Abdullah ibn Sa'id, who conquered the Exarchate of Africa, a virtuously autonomous Byzantine satellite state. After the assassination of the third caliph Uthman in AD 656, and with the increasingly tumultuous waters of the caliphal political landscape, the conquest of Africa was halted and abandoned. In AD 670, a second wave of conquest was ushered by Muawiyah I, a cousin of Uthman and son of Abu Sufyan, and the founder and first caliph of the Umayyad dynasty. Muawiyah sent 10,000 soldiers under the command of the legendary general Uqba ibn Nafi', who established the city of Qayrawan as a garrison for Arab forces, before it became the capital of the region of Ifriqiya. Ifriqiya was an Umayyad province centered around modern-day Tunisia, going from western Egypt to eastern Morocco. After founding Qayrawan, Uqba ibn Nafi' pushed his conquests westward until he reached the Atlantic, where he was stopped and repulsed. Spanish historian Luis Garcia de Valdeavellano describes it this way, quote, "In their invasions against the Byzantines and the Berbers, the Arab chieftains had greatly extended their African dominions, and as early as the year 682, Uqba ibn Nafi' had reached the shores of the Atlantic, but he was unable to occupy Tangier, for he was forced to turn back toward the Atlas Mountains by a man who became known to history and legend as Count Julian." End quote. After Uqba's conquest, almost all North Africa was subdued by the Umayyads except for the ancient territories of Roman Numidia and Mauritania, roughly corresponding to present-day Morocco and Algeria. A third Umayyad incursion, this time led by the Umayyad general and governor of Ifriqiya, Hassan ibn al-Nu'man, was sent in AD 698 and confronted to a powerful Amazigh army led by the infamous Berber queen Kahina. The Umayyads decimated the Berber army in the Battle of Tabarka in AD 703, thus becoming the undisputed masters of North Africa. After this Umayyad victory, Hassan ibn Nu'man was relieved from his post and replaced by Musa ibn Nusayr, under whose governorate Tariq ibn Ziyad famously conquered Andalusia in AD 711. The Umayyads ruled over North Africa until AD 740, when an unstoppable tide of revolution swept their power once and for all. Part 2, The Great Berber Revolt. Now, for all intents and purposes, I will use the words Berber and Amazigh interchangeably to describe the indigenous population of North Africa. Now, what we need to know is that the Umayyad Empire was a mammoth territory that stretched from the gates of India all the way to the Pyrenees in the north of modern-day Spain. This incredibly huge territory needed an efficient and reliable administration to function, which is why the Umayyads decided to centralize their rule in Damascus. From their Syrian capital, the caliphs controlled this immense empire through governors they personally appointed to the different regions of the empire. In North Africa, the Umayyad governors ruled the province of Ifriqiya from the city of Qayrawan in Tunisia. Because of this centralization, the indigenous Amazigh populations of North Africa were completely disconnected from the seat of the caliphal power in Damascus, not only geographically, but also institutionally. This made it extremely hard for them to make their voice heard and their complaints taken seriously. Despite forming a majority in the Umayyad army and in the North African population, the Amazigh were continuously mistreated by the minority Arab elites and subject to harsh treatment by some of the Umayyad governors, who heavily taxed them in coin, crops, and even women. Under the reign of the Umayyad Caliph Hisham ibn Abd al-Malik, the tensions between the Umayyad governors of Ifriqiya and the local Berber tribes rapidly deteriorated. The indigenous Amazigh inhabitants grew tired of the harsh treatment by their Arab overlords and enacted a revolution that would change the course of Muslim history. In AD 740, when the Umayyad Ifriqiyan army was busy conquering Sicily, a Moroccan Berber chieftain called Maysara al-Matghari raised an army and reconquered the city of Tangier from the Umayyad. In doing so, Maysara started the Great Berber Revolt and completely blindsided the Eastern Umayyad Caliph by his actions. Upon taking Tangier, Maysara declared himself Caliph, the first non-Arab in history to claim the prestigious title. But Maysara's rule was extremely short, as his army grew displeased with him and replaced him with one of the most underrated figures in Moroccan history, Khalid ibn Hamid al-Zanati. When the Umayyad governor of Ifriqiya heard of the great Berber revolt, he quickly retreated from Sicily and gathered all the Arab nobility to create a powerful, well-trained army. He then set for the city of Tangier in the hopes of crushing the rebellion. The Umayyad forces met the Berber army near Tangier, and Khalid ibn Hamid al-Zanati and his Berber army crushed the Umayyad forces and decimated the Ifriqian Arab nobility, hence the battle came to be known as the Battle of the Nobles. This Umayyad loss sent shockwaves throughout the empire, and the Caliph Hisham ibn Abd al-Malik set about to gather an immense army of 30,000 Syrians who came in support of the 40,000 Ifriqians the Umayyad governor had gathered. Under the command of Habib ibn Abi Ubaidah al-Fihri, the 70,000 strong Umayyad army marched on the Berber army of Khalid ibn Hamid al-Zanati. The two met at the Sbu River near the city of Fez in AD 741. The result was a resounding Berber victory. Khalid ibn Hamid al-Zanati had crushed the Syrian and Ifriqian Umayyad armies who fled either to Qayrawan or to Andalusia. In fact, the influx of so many Syrians in Andalusia completely destabilized the socio-economic status quo in the Iberian Peninsula and set the stage for Abd al-Rahman I to declare an independent Andalusian emirate in AD 756. Khalid ibn Hamid al-Zanati, after having led the two decisive victories at the Battle of the Nobles in 740 and the Battle of Baghdura in 741, had completed his mission to definitively repel the Umayyads from the Maghreb. Shortly after the year 741, this enigmatic and powerful figure who had shaken an empire disappears from the chronicles. The shockwave of al-Zanati's military victories shattered Umayyad rule in Damascus, who were already hanging on by a thin thread. By the year 747, the Umayyads were massacred and ousted from power by a new dynasty, the Abbasids, who established the second Arab empire in history and founded the city of Baghdad, overseeing the Islamic Golden Age. After al-Zanati's victories, different Amazigh political entities established new states in Morocco, thus signaling the beginning of Moroccan independence, as it would never again be ruled by a foreign power until the 20th century. Part 3, The Birth of Morocco and the Amazigh Emirates. Very few extant sources exist today to describe in detail the aftermath of the Great Berber Revolt, as Zanati's revolt and the fall of the Umayyad Empire created immense power vacuums throughout the old Umayyad territories, and Morocco was no exception. Two Moroccan states were born from the ashes of the Great Berber Revolt, the Emirate of Barwata in 744 and the Emirate of Sijilmassa in 757. However, a third Moroccan state was already independent before the Great Berber Revolt, the Emirate of Nikkor, which is de facto the first independent Muslim state in history, as it was established in the year 710 by Caliphal decree. Centered around the Moroccan Reef, Nikkor was established by Saleh ibn Mansur, an Arab noble descended from a companion of Uqba ibn Nafi', the general who led the second Umayyad conquest of North Africa. Nikkor thrived until it was conquered by the Almoravids in the year 1019. The Emirate of Sijilmassa, on the other hand, was established by the Amazigh Midrarid dynasty in 757 and lasted until the year 976. They ruled the Moroccan region of Tafilez, and their capital of Sijilmassa became an important trading center even after their fall. Sijilmassa's prominence rose through the centuries, and in the 15th century, the city became the starting point of the current Moroccan ruling house, the Alawites, in their conquest of Morocco. But both the Emirates of Nikkor and Sijilmassa pale in comparison with what could historically be considered the true first Moroccan state, the Emirate of Barwata. What's quite disappointing is that the historiography of the Berowates is immensely difficult to establish, as no original records have survived to this day. Everything we know about the Berowates was written by Andalusian historians who described them through the embassies the Berowates sent to the Umayyad emirs and caliphs of Cordoba. We know they were a confederation of tribes mainly from the Masmuda, and they formed a powerful kingdom between the 8th and 11th centuries. Following the Great Berber Revolt of Maysara, they established an independent emirate on the Atlantic coast between Safi and Saleh, under the aegis of Tarif al-Matghari. Taking advantage of the Berber Revolt, the Barghwata took up arms against the Arab Umayyads. Their king at the time was called Tarif Abu Saleh. It was his son, Saleh, who founded the new religion, but it was kept secret for generations. Because yes, the Barghwatas actually had a religion different from Islam, and it was the grandson of Saleh, called Yunus, who revealed it, proclaiming his grandfather the Salih al-Mu'minin, or the righteous among the faithful, of whom the Qur'an speaks in Surah 66, verse 4. So the Berowates used the Qur'an to legitimize their rule and declared themselves new prophets. Yunus actually claimed to have received the revelation in Libya of a holy book which contained only 80 chapters, as opposed to the original Qur'an's 114. But the most striking difference with the original Qur'an was that this one was not written in Arabic, but in the Masmuda tongue of the Amazigh tribe of Barghwata. The chapters of this new Qur'an had names of prophets like Job, Jonah and Saul, or animals like the rooster, or the snake, or the grasshopper. In addition to this book that had to be recited at all prayers, Saleh had given his people a code of specific religious laws. The number of canonical prayers was 10 and not 5, as among other Muslims. The month of fasting was not Ramadan but Rajab. Public prayer was on Thursday and not on Friday, and magic and divination were actually part of this new religion inspired by Islam. The dietary prohibitions were much more severe than those of Islam, however. Saleh forbade eggs, the heads of animals such as sheep, and the flesh of the rooster, which was held as a sacred animal. Historians believe that it was Yunus himself who developed these doctrines. In fact, he was an ardent propagandist, converting those who wanted to rebel against the Arab caliphal power. The Orthodox Muslims, Arabs and Berbers, called for a holy war against the Barghwata heretics, but the latter, entrenched in their territory, were able to defend themselves and protect their religion for a long time. A few bits of information reported by Arab historians only add to the mystery of this ephemeral kingdom. In AD 1058, however, the Barghwatas were completely subdued and lost their power to the rising Almoravids. Because of their blatant heresy, the Barghwatas have never been accepted as the original founders of modern Morocco, despite them being a native dynasty established a full 45 years before the Idrisids. And because of the very little sources that have made it to us today, we can never know what was real and what was made up to vilify them and justify the fact that they were mostly forgotten to Moroccan history. Today, some archaeological work is being done in the region of Saleh, where the Barghwata kingdom once ruled, to try and know more about this mysterious dynasty. But above all, what these Amazigh emirates have done was set Morocco apart from the rest of the Muslim world through their independence and staunch love of freedom. Morocco's inception and independence had thus been set in stone and confirmed by the Idrisids 45 years later. When the Idrisids fell to the Andalusian Umayyads in 974, it was the Barghwatas who carried the flame of Moroccan freedom and independence until another Moroccan dynasty, the Almoravids, took over the Moroccan throne in the year 1040. Thank you for tuning into this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it, as it was quite a long one. I look forward to speaking to you next month about the Idrisid Emirate of Morocco.